Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, a New Year's celebration. Played by our teams of panelists who spent some time celebrating.
No, we have the answer over here. Don't you give it.
No, wait a minute,
Who has
my
it?
Question.
Who
is it? Is it your question?
It's Francine's question.
Oh,
that's
sorry.
How long ago it was.
there.
I thought it was over.
Take away that woman's eggnog, will you please? It was one of those afternoons where all seemed festive, all seemed well. Until the festivities got a little out of hand.
But I lack moral fiber.
So, thank you for sharing that, Costa.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Maybe we can get them as an underwriter.
Yeah.
You lack moral fiber.
It would take 10 bowls of moral fiber.
Right.
So come be witness to all that happened the day Says You decided to celebrate New Year's. When we return...
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Iran claims it's now tested medium-range missiles, just as the government also says it wants to restart international talks on its disputed nuclear program. However, as Terry Schultz reports from Brussels, the European Union diplomat tasked with heading up negotiations has heard nothing from Tehran.
Iranian media say top nuclear negotiator Saeed Jalili wants to open a new round of talks with Catherine Ashton, the EU's foreign policy chief in charge of negotiating with Tehran on curbing its nuclear program. But Ashton spokesman Michael Mann says she's received no response from Iranian officials since sending a letter in October seeking to restart the dialogue. The last round of talks was held a year ago between Jalili, Ashton, and representatives from the so-called P5+1, the U.S., Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany. The EU said Iran wasn't willing to drop preconditions for substantive discussions, and no progress was made. President Obama enacted new sanctions Saturday that target Iranian banks. The EU is likely to toughen its measures, too, when foreign ministers meet January 30th. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Also today, Iran is claiming to have produced its first fuel rod for use in its nuclear power plants, and state TV says it has been successfully tested. The new year brings a higher minimum wage in 8 states, as NPR's Martin Costi reports from Seattle, Washington State boasts the nation's highest statewide minimum.
Washington's minimum has jumped 37 cents to $9.04 an hour, almost $2 more than the federal minimum wage. Even though most hourly workers already earn more than the minimum, pro-business groups are complaining. Michael Saltzman of the Employment Policies Institute cites studies that show minimum wage hikes may kill some jobs, especially for young part-time workers.
A little over 100,000 teens had lost their job because of a higher federal minimum wage. That may pale in comparison to the overall impact of the recession, but it's still a hit.
Supporters of higher minimums say they help to prop up wages in a time of high unemployment, and more money for low-income earners translates into more consumer spending. Martin Costi, NPR News, Seattle.
A new poll shows Mitt Romney leading his rivals for the Republican presidential nomination in the Iowa caucuses. The Des Moines Register finds 24% of those surveyed favor Romney, while 22% support Ron Paul. The race still appears to be up in the air. Rick Santorum is gaining strength. And the poll shows 41% of likely caucus goers say they are undecided or still might change their minds. The Iowa caucuses on Tuesday. Police and firefighters in the Los Angeles area have been responding to more car fires. 4 broke out last night, and fire officials say at least one fits the profile of a string of other blazes that authorities believe were set deliberately. More than a dozen fires were set before dawn yesterday, and nearly 24 others a day earlier. From Washington, this is NPR News. Officials in Ohio say they believe the latest earthquake there is related to the injection of wastewater into the ground near a fault line, creating enough pressure to cause seismic activity. The waste comes from drilling operations that use so-called fracking processes to extract gas. Ohio Department of Natural Resources says fracking itself is not causing the quakes, but Patty Gorchev, who lives about 15 miles from the epicenter of yesterday's quake, isn't buying that.
I pray this is a wake-up call.
people need to start paying attention. This is the biggest one we've had so far, and I'm sure we're going to get aftershocks after this.
Yesterday's 4.0 magnitude quake outside of Youngstown was the 11th in a series of minor earthquakes in the area. The Ohio Seismic Network says more are likely until pressure at the fault line is relieved. There were no immediate reports of damage or injuries from a strong earthquake that struck off the shores of Japan today. The U.S. Geological Survey says the quake had a magnitude of 6.8. New Year's will be celebrated today at Niagara Falls with a cannon salute on both sides of the Niagara River. NPR's Margot Adler reports that it's a salute to nearly 200 years of peace between Canada and the United States.
According to the Niagara Gazette, the cannons will be fired New Year's Day at the Fort George National Historic Site in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario, and at the Old Fort Niagara State Historic Site in Youngstown, New York. This celebration is the kickoff to a series of events marking the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812, when the U.S. fought against Britain and Canada. Both forts had key roles in the war. The War of 1812 lasted 3 years. Margot Adler, NPR News, New York.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, celebrating 20 years of being a source for what works in education. More at edutopia.org.
From Boston, says you. A game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy. Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome home for the holidays to the Carriage House on the Codman Estate in Lincoln, Massachusetts for Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He'll ring out the old and ring in the new and have such a ringing in his ears, Tony Khan. She'll pop the cork, sip the bubbly, lose her car keys, Francine Akbar. And he'll be a stone's throw from Times Square when the ball drops in the Big Apple, Mr. Barry Nolan. Led on this occasion?
At Barry.
That's a New
Barry.
York tradition, is throwing stones right at midnight. Yes.
Mr. Nolan will captain. To my left, team two. You've heard of Auld Lang Syne? He's Auld Lang Syne. Arnie Risman. From CBS Boston, she resolves this year to be resolutely irresolute, Miss Paula Lyons. And she sees the new year as a time to start fresh, and she's already as fresh as they come, Miss Carolyn Fay Fox. And the captain over there?
Paula.
Zayety.
Our game is played in 5 rounds. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin the new year philosophically. Please help me explain the following philosophical terms. Oops. Carolyn, the social contract.
The social contract, Rousseau.
Rousseau.
Among others, yes.
Among others? What do you mean, among others?
Well, you got your Hobbes, you got your Locke, you got
Joan Rivers. Who else had a social contract?
Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers.
Who has a social
contract? I think it's the social contract is sort of like the foundation of a democracy, that we are all in this together, that we have rights and responsibilities, and those who are able take care of the less fortunate. That's the social contract.
Yeah, very, very good. 10 points.
I didn't work in government for nothing.
Yes.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Yes, a man who would know. Yes, societies derive from the common will of the individuals in it, the consent of the governed to be governed. Tony, utilitarianism.
Utilitarianism is the ability to take a screwdriver and apply it correctly to the right kind of screw head,
yes,
so that after 5 years of being nagged, you can finally make a household repair. Utilitarianism is sort of like a pragmatic philosophy that if something works, it's right. Utilitarianism.
You're getting there.
The ultimate justification is that it works.
You're
know how what's the name? Jeremy Bentham.
Jeremy Bentham is right. That's exactly right.
Was the prime utilitarian.
He is the prime.
Greatest happiness for the greatest number.
That is exactly right, Francine. Ooh. Very good. It's very good.
Wow.
Jeremy Bentham's treatise that in any moral situation, the morally superior position is that which does the greatest good for the greatest number. Arnie, cognitive dissonance.
Oh. It's the original name for this show.
Exactly.
Is it the ability to hold two contradictory thoughts at the same time?
You're getting there, yeah.
And three contradictory thoughts.
14 contradictory thoughts at the same time.
No, it's the contradiction that you want to go with, yes.
Well, holding those two conflicting beliefs and yet still hewing to each belief, even though they really can't occupy the same space at the same time.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the 10 points. Any help from the audience on this?
Leon Festinger, psychological theory, that says that it's the discomfort that comes from holding two contradictory.
It's a discomfort.
Yes, only in a says you audience, ladies and gentlemen, where you find a reference to Leon Festinger. Yes, it is. It is the psychological tension resulting from two simultaneously conflicting ideas and beliefs. As you said, it's resolved by either giving up one, building support for one to overwhelm the other, or just flat-out denial. So if you say, the world was supposed to end on Thursday, and today's Sunday, and the world hasn't ended, well, you say...
I didn't say which Thursday.
Yeah. You say, it was my great faith that kept the world from being destroyed on Thursday. Francine, pantheism. P-A-N-T-H-E-I-S-M.
Worshipping underwear.
Yeah. 20 points. Oh.
No.
Victoria's Secret at last revealed.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I draw the line.
That's great.
All right.
All right, now we really know the answer.
I think Carolyn really summed it up well, but I think it's
no,
the notion.
No, we have the answer over here. Don't you give it.
No,
wait a minute.
Who has
my
it?
Question.
Who's
question?
Is it your Francine's question?
It's Francine's
question.
Oh,
that's how long ago it was. There, dear.
Take away that woman's eggnog, will you please?
It's the philosophy of God everywhere in everything.
That is exactly right. 10 points. God is in everything and everyone. God is actually synonymous with the universe. Spinoza's philosophy, pantheism.
We're all right there.
Paula, Socratic irony. I loved finding out about this, actually.
Socratic irony.
Since the Socratic method is questioning and irony.
Yes.
See, I have personally no idea what Socratic irony is. So shall we just play with it a little and dream one up? It's a question in which the answer is hidden the answer is there.
I would bet it's a statement that is inaccurate, but it's presented in such a way that the person who hears the statement has to explain why the statement isn't so.
Well, that part of it is true, yes, but it's not quite just a statement. I'm going to give you some points for that. Give them 7 points for that. Any help from the other side?
The irony, as we know from an earlier edition of Says You, is a reversal of expectations.
Right.
So it would be a question which poses a reversal of expectations.
Not quite. Any help from the audience? Anyone know? Socratic irony is part of the Socratic method of teaching. The teacher feigns ignorance in order to elicit the answer from the students. That is Socratic irony. And I enjoyed learning that even if I didn't know it to begin with.
So that's an annoying thing your history teacher does in the first session, going, so why do we study history?
Yeah. Right. That's exactly right.
Answering question with a question.
Barry, logical positivism.
Logical positivism is a school of philosophy.
It is.
Which states
yes.
that the way to resolve problems is to, number one, to assume good and to use logic to approach it. Not to assume that man is inherently evil and that Eve duped him, but to assume that it's a generally benign to benevolent universe and it operates in a way that can be fathomed.
You know, he was totally wrong until the bitter end when he actually stumbled on something.
It's sort of like the way parents explain to the children why they're not getting the Xbox for Christmas.
Yeah. Any help from the audience on logical positivism?
Philosophy that has the only acceptable truth claims are empirical observations or tautology.
That's exactly right, from the audience.
Absolutely right.
It's a belief in logic, reason, and the scientific method as the only true sources of true knowledge of reality, and it rejects such disciplines as metaphysics and all that type of thing. That's not observable. Round two is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Dactyls. It's the variation on our bluffing round called Biofictionary. Paula, all of you have a card in front of you. On one of those cards is written the actual claim to fame of a person, I hope, known to none of you. On the other cards, the words, please bluff. 10 points, Barry, if your team can separate fact from fantasy. A small interlude, please, while stories are concocted about the claim to fame of George Crumb. C-R-U-M. George Crumb. Gentlemen? This is Richard. As the year draws to a close, we'd like to take a moment and thank all the folks who came out last year to join us for a live taping of Says You. From the warm waters of the Pacific to the chilly shores of Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, from San Francisco to Lake Champlain, everywhere we went, you were great. We hope to see you in the new year when we return to Boston, California, and wherever else our travels take us. We'll post next fall schedule early this spring with the hope that we can get close enough to you to entice you to come and play. And to all, we wish you the best for the holiday season and for the new year from all of us at Says You. Says You returns after this from home. Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? so many questions, all answered on our website at sezhou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at sezhou.net. That's SAYSYOU. John McGann. Thank you, gentlemen.
That's a New England version of Deliverance. In the
That was great. Giving us a little time with Mr. George Crumb, whose contribution will be revealed to us by one of the following three people. We'll start with Carolyn.
Yeah, we've been chilling with George Crumb.
Chilling
because George Crumb, who was also known as the Blizzard Wizard, was the inventor of that snow spray, aerosol snow in a can, the faux snow.
Faux snow. Inventor of faux snow. Not a lot of call for that up here, but...
Well, you never know.
Arnie, George Crumb.
Well, he actually was an inventor.
Oh.
But he was a Native American chef who was working at the Moon Lake Lodge in Saratoga Springs, New York in 1853...
What month?
When he wowed his diners with the potato chip.
The potato chip. What was the diner? The
Moon
Lake
Lodge.
Yeah. The Moon Lake Lodge. Mm-hmm.
And he was the chef?
He was the chef.
What was the date?
1853. 8 years later, we were at a Civil War over that potato chip.
And was he the sous chef or the chef de cuisine?
Arnie, when did they invent the dip?
What?
When did they invent dip?
Dip?
Dip.
That's another question.
Yeah, that's
for another
question.
Day.
For another
I didn't
time.
Think if anybody would know, Arnie would.
Yeah.
That
he
was
would,
George's
but not
daughter,
now.
Ima.
Never hit air.
Never.
Paula, George Crumb.
Well, poor George.
Poor George.
Unsung as he was, because Sam Adams had a bigger ego and a better press agent. though Sam Adams took the credit, George Crumb was indeed the creator of and very first member of the Sons of Liberty here in the colony of Massachusetts.
But Sam got all the credit.
In the Bay Colony, right. Mm.
The first Son of Liberty, the inventor of the potato chip, or the inventor of faux snow. Barry, what do you think?
I this is basically a wild guess.
It is.
Well, I do know the story of the invention of the potato chip, but unfortunately, I cannot remember the name of the gentleman who who wanted it, but he was some famous guy. I don't know.
Does Native American?
The story ever included the name of the chef, though. I have a feeling that the chef may have been unknown, and the point of the story was that somebody famous was tired of being served potatoes in some way, and so the chef kind of cooked up something different. But then again...
And I think it's the creator of the Sons of Liberty.
How can you have one Son of Liberty? I mean, how do you get this
something
started?
He started.
Is there, like, a moose, a first moose, and then he says, I don't want to go around just being the only moose, I'm going to... Form the moose?
I'd like to suggest we go with creator of the Sons of Liberty.
Sir?
Because we seem to be settled.
Did she say creator, or did she just say member?
The first son of the Sons of Liberty.
I would think we
seem to be in agreement that it's not the potato chip guy, and snow in a can doesn't seem to be in the running, so it's a blind guess that it's the creator of the Sons of Liberty.
Paula?
Yes.
They think it's the creator, the first of the Sons of Liberty. And audience, what's your opinion? What do you think? Well, they're all over the place.
No, there are a lot of Sons
Paula,
of Liberty.
Tell us.
A lot of Sons of Liberty.
No, Sam Adams created the Sons of Liberty.
That was very
George
good,
Crumb had nothing to do with it.
10 points. Yeah. That was a bluff. You know something? You may be looking at faux snow here.
I think so, because George Crumb's not a very Native snow. American name.
Mr. George Crumb did what exactly?
Arnie?
Native American chef at the Moon Lake Lodge in Saratoga Springs, who in 1853 invented the potato chip.
And who,
inventor
Arnie,
of the potato chip.
Arnie, who was the guy who he did it for? It was some. It was a wealthy white
the
guy.
The card stops there, Tony.
Does anybody
I don't
remember?
Know.
Diamond Jim Brady.
1853 is a little early for Diamond Jim.
Let me read from George Crumb, inventor of the potato chip here, which says that French fries were popular at a restaurant, and one day a diner complained that the fries were too thick, so they sent them back, and George Crumb, the chef, made them thinner, and the guy still didn't like them, so he sent them back a third time, and George said, "I'll tell you what, they're not coming back again." And he made the thinnest he could possibly make just to make the man angry. Well, the man thought it was a delicacy, and that's the history of the potato chip.
And you know, Richard, I've heard that they were initially called Saratoga chips.
They were initially called Saratoga chips and potato crunches, that's right. And they were invented at the Moon Lake Lodge in Saratoga Springs, New York.
This week's New Year's special contains two bonus rounds, the first of which dates back to our third season. In the shadow of Trinity Church in Boston's old Back Bay, we gathered one holiday season in the Oak Room of the Fairmont Copley Plaza to celebrate the new year. 'Twas there we were joined by Lenore Shannon, who helped us play that New Year's round of famous firsts.
From the clues given, please tell me the primary characteristic shared by the following. Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
By this time, renowned for her discoveries, in 1911, Marie Curie attained a triumph unparalleled. What was she the first to achieve?
She glowed in the dark. Arnie?
Radium.
Radium.
Well, she had already discovered it
already
before
radium.
Then. This is
the first
woman in Nobel Prize?
It's more than that.
She discovered first French woman.
The first married woman.
It does have to do with the Nobel.
Was that the first Nobel Prize in chemistry?
It was not. You're okay. So close. You're dancing all around.
Was it the first time a woman had won it alone?
No, not that. I'm going to give you 7 points because you knew that it was about Nobel the Nobel Prize, but you're missing the kicker that makes it extra special.
Would she have been the first person to receive two Nobel Prizes?
That's the key, right?
Oh, she got the second.
She is the
Nobel
first
Prize.
Person That's ever right. to receive two Nobel Prizes for physics in 1907 and chemistry in 1911.
Oh, wow.
Tony, this French acrobat invented aerial tumbling in 1859. In his honor was named perhaps the most important piece of a performer's equipment. Who was he?
Jacques Le BBD.
You don't know how close you are.
He was an aerial tumbler, you said?
He was an aerial. You know, you're so close.
Parachute.
Oh, yeah.
Trapeze.
Not the trapeze. No. You were closer with Tony.
Yeah. BBD?
The other side is exploding with recognition.
Elastic waistbands?
Your Honor, I'm going to give you 7 points because you're dancing all around it. Most important part of a performer's equipment from the other side.
Leotards.
Jules Leotard was the man, yes.
Leotard.
Jules Leotard in 1859 invented aerial acrobatics.
That's close.
We know him today for something else.
Right.
Arnie, you might not know Samuel Hopkins, the inventor of a process for potash and pearl ashes, but why would he be included in this category?
Potash and pearl ashes?
That's like a something you add to the soil to enhance it.
Really has nothing to do with it. But,
oh, it doesn't?
What's his name?
You might not know Samuel Hopkins, the inventor of a process for potash and pearl ashes, but why might he be included in this category?
For potash?
Because he knew his ashes from his elbow.
There you go.
it's something people have in...
Six points for that, yes.
Hopkins.
He was the
could you read
what?
That?
Oh, Samuel Hopkins. No clue. Any help from the
no,
other side?
Kim.
Nothing
Kim.
To do with the actual discovery itself. But huh. Any help from the audience? No, we should all remember Mr. Samuel Hopkins, the inventor, because he holds U.S. patent number 00001. Mr. Samuel
wow.
Hopkins.
I can't believe you all didn't know that.
Yeah. Hauling your ashes and whatever.
Wow.
Try this right. one, Lenore. In 1936, Wallace Warfield Simpson's notoriety thrust her into journalistic history, the first to be so recognized. What was her unsought achievement?
Unsought achievement?
Unsought.
Well, we know what she sought.
Yeah. Yes, we do know what she
sought.
She didn't
what she
first
got.
Divorce
the first
day.
Well, I know, right, but that's so obvious, right, to marry the king. Well, to consort with the king before she married him. But is that the answer? That could
no,
be the
answer.
No, it has
to do with journalism.
Journalism.
It has to
that's
do
yeah.
with journalism.
Yeah.
To
journalism.
Did she sell an interview?
She did. Oh, what a great guess.
That's a great answer.
Give him a couple of
that
points for that. Give him 5 points for that. That's a great guess. Mm. Not right, but...
the first person of the year. The, well, like a Time magazine
person of the year?
Give that's him the full 10 points.
Very good. 1986.
Wallace wow. Warfield Simpson was the first to be Time's Woman of the Year in 1936. Very good.
Wow.
Paula, the only reason I'm asking you this is because I simply cannot believe this. In 1958, television appearances helped Julia Child achieve number one status in what endeavor?
Cooking show.
It was the first cooking show, wasn't it, that got nationally syndicated?
Yes, but that it's more related to her. To Miss Child
well,
herself.
She was the first cook to drop something on the floor on live television, pick it up, yeah. and cook it anyway. Yeah. And she said, tell your guests I'll go get the other one.
Yeah.
No?
It's about
what
her cooking, that's for sure.
Cooked with a microwave.
No.
Does anyone in the audience have...
1958.
That well, you know, not only that, she was the first woman to be deemed a full-fledged chef. Can this possibly be true in 1958? But I want help from the. I'd like some help from the listening audience. I just can't even believe that that's true. And finally, Barry, in 1765, he financed and forever lent his name to the first mass production of a product found right here, all around us, in this room. What was the incredibly successful venture set into motion by Dr. Walter Baker?
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
Oops. Well, the other side seems to...
Having grown up in Milton, Massachusetts.
If you look about this room, you will see the product everywhere. Dr. Walter Baker, even
Walter
though he wasn't
Baker,
the inventor...
Walter Baker, 1765.
Paula has both hands raised as high as she possibly can.
What? Furniture?
It is not furniture.
It's furniture, glass, or fabric.
It is none of those.
Nope.
How many in the audience think they know this? Don't say it out loud. Whoa, there's a few people around.
Goodness.
They're actually closer to it than you are. So.
They're not close.
Oh, we may have to go
Bristol?
To the other side.
This is like playing I Spy.
Yeah, no, yeah, come on.
Cutlery.
The funny thing is, Miss Lyons had no trouble at all with this one, Paula.
I smelled it walking home from school every day of my life. Chocolate. Walter Baker's Chocolate Factory.
Nah, well, too late.
Give him 5 points for eventually getting to chocolate. It is, in fact, Baker's Chocolate, the first mass-produced confection in America. And I always thought Baker's product was not a brand name. I thought it was a generic term.
No,
Baker's used it, but it is not. That's the first of today's bonus rounds. We'll be back in the second half of the show with another New Year's category from that snowy day. Now, back to today's show. And Happy New Year from all of us at Says You. Let's go on to round three. Connor Lee, Betsy Geist, Peggy Werthman, and family listen just the way we like it as a group in Seattle, Washington. Saturday mornings on KUOW. They write, you recently added a round called Anagrammies, and here's a list of some more. An example, if I ask you a canine deity, you would respond, dog god. Okay? Try this one, Carolyn.
Oh.
Heavenly Funnies.
Heavenly funnies? Would it be angel?
Stars.
Heavenly funnies.
The other side has it.
Stars. Srats.
Cosmic comics.
Is exactly cosmic right. Comics. Heavenly funnies are cosmic comics.
Oh, I get it. You don't have to do it absolutely backwards. You just have
no,
to rearrange
no,
it.
No, they're
the anagrams of one another.
Anagram. Okay.
Tony, try this one. Alaskan portent.
Alaskan? Oh, Gnome Omen.
Gnome Omen is just everywhere
very
in the audience. Thank you very much.
Quick, Tony, quick.
10 points. Good. Very good. A gnome omen is exactly right. Arnie, benign phobias.
Fears?
Fear.
Benign phobias. safe fears.
Yes.
Safer fears.
Very right. good. 10 points.
Safer.
Try this one, Francine. Taste syrups.
Oh, sweet tweets.
Oh, samples maples.
Samples maples is exactly right.
Samples.
Very good.
Samples
maples.
S-A-M-P-L-E-M-A-P.
Taste. Paula, great satchel. S-A-T-C-H-E-L. Great satchel.
Bag.
Gap bag.
Gap bag. Sack.
Satchel. Valise.
This is tough.
Briefcase.
This is a tough one.
Great.
Bag. Great. Terrific.
yes.
Great.
Most people out here have it now. It's spreading around the audience like wildfire. Any help for the other side?
Police.
We go to the audience for?
Super purse.
That's exactly right. Super purse.
That was a great cartoon, Super Purse.
Super Purse. You remember.
It I goes everywhere you want to be.
With the power to shop like no other.
I would never.
I know.
And
I would
finally,
never
Barry,
ever think of purse as a synonym for satchel if I stayed here all day. Yes. Satchel is a very big thing, and a purse is not.
Well, I.
That's right, Paula, and they
you
have
know,
different purposes. Let's get indignant.
Yes. I direct your criticism to Connor Lee, Betsy Geist, and Peggy Werthman and family of Seattle.
Okay, well, I love Seattle, so I'll
radio.
Be kind.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Barry, faithful metal.
M-E-T-A-L?
Faithful metal.
M-E-T-A-L.
Well, true, loyal.
Loyal, what's...
True? True?
Yola. What's a... Loyal alloy.
Yes. Now, thank you to the folks in Seattle for that. Let's go on to round four, which is Barry's chance with Biofictionary. One of you will tell us the truth. Two will bluff. 10 points, Paula, for knowing your opponents. Take a few seconds to come up with the claim to fame of Florence Woods.
Florence Woods.
W-O-O-D-S. Florence Woods.
That's
gentlemen?
A plural.
Plural.
Just a quick reminder, next month, Seju is off to Southern California for live performances in Thousand Oaks and Riverside. Tickets, information, and details are available at seju.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. That's Saturday, February 18th in Thousand Oaks and Sunday, February 19th in Riverside. Live performances of Seju. Seju pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much, gentlemen. We've had some time to figure out the contribution of Florence Woods. We'll go first to Tony.
Well, just for the sake of accuracy, what I have on my card is Florence Wood.
It's actually Woods.
Oh.
That changes everything. That
well, it somehow makes the definition that I have here make more sense, but if you say it's Woods, okay. Charles Wood was the inventor of the typewriter as well as of the bunk bed. He had two daughters. The older daughter was the more favored one. Florence was the one who slept below her, and so she was given the honor of having the typewriter, the Underwood, named after her. Florence Wood was the person after whom the Underwood typewriter was named.
What's your definition?
Yeah,
it's not a definition. It's
no,
a biographical.
It's a contribution.
No, she is the woman after whom the first typewriter, the Underwood typewriter, was named. I presume
Florence Wood.
I presume it's
the first typewriter was named for Florence Wood,
who is also the inventor of the bunk bed.
So she played a key
interesting.
Role.
not particularly persuasive, but interesting.
You'd be surprised what editing can do.
Francine, Florence Woods.
Florence Woods was an American leader who in the early 1970s adapted and promulgated the work of the La Leche League from France, which is a society to encourage breastfeeding.
An early advocate of breastfeeding. Barry, Florence Woods.
In 1901, Elmore Woods was the first man in the U.S. to be officially diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. Oh, I'm sorry. And in 1900, Florence Woods was the first woman in the U.S. to receive a driver's license.
Wow.
Great.
Well, breastfeeding.
And welcome to another episode of Cognitive Dissonance.
Yeah. So funny Elmore didn't go down in history. The first driver's license went to Florence Woods. She was a breastfeeding advocate. Well, the Underwood typewriter was named for her.
She could breastfeed and typewrite at the same time that she drove, and that's why her husband was anxious.
She had no early cell version phone. Of the cell phone laws.
Okay, team. Votes.
Well, I'm already hearing the argument going back and forth in front of me.
Yes. Go ahead. Just dismiss me now. Get it over.
Okay,
me.
Tony, well, you're dismissed.
Since you were basing it on a typo...
See how it all fits in? See the subtlety in that?
It's smooth and revealed.
Florence and the lost letter.
You don't think it's La Leche?
No, I don't. I think it's the first woman to get a driver's license.
And because?
I just feel that way.
Because you said you studied midwifery.
Yeah, I did, after my daughter was born. And somehow the name Florence Woods, or Woods, Wood or Woods, does not ring a bell. And I think that little bell would have gone off had it been familiar.
I like the idea of the first driver's license for a woman. even if it's wrong, I like the idea. So
that's what we... it's two against...
Well, that's two of us, but you're the captain.
I know, but I lack moral fiber.
And thank you for sharing that, Costa.
Yes, that's right.
Maybe we can get them as an underwriter. Yeah. You lack moral fiber.
Right. It would take 10 bowls of moral fiber.
Right.
You know, I'm now offering my definition for 5 free points.
Yes.
It's looking better by the moment.
Oh, God.
Looking better by the moment.
All right, we'll go with the first woman to obtain a driver's license.
You really think it's the first woman to obtain a driver's
license? Well, no, we don't.
I like the way
think
Barry
anything.
Got into it.
We're just doing it. It was great. We're going there.
Even if it's wrong.
Barry, they think Florence Woods got a driver's license, and a year later something else happened.
I made up the part about Elmore, but the part about Florence... In 1900, the first woman in the U.S. to receive a driver's license.
Yes!
Thank you very much.
See, what good is moral?
Well, the ghost.
I'm now ready to offer my answer for 8 points.
You know, Paula, moral
the victim
fibers.
Of a typo. I'm so sorry, Tony.
Today's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Frank Butler of Houston, Texas. He writes, I miss your literary rounds. You know, the ones where I actually get a chance to use my liberal arts education. You don't do them as often as you used to. So how about a quote or two for a Spotlight Round? Okay, Frank, in keeping with our New Year's theme, how about this round from the aforementioned New Year's show? Famous first words. In keeping with our theme today, please tell me the famous work begun with the following words. Carolyn, A few miles south of Soledad, the Salinas River drops in close to the hillside bank and runs deep and green.
Grapes of Wrath?
No.
The Cannery Row.
East of Eden.
Neither one, but you're in the ballpark.
Oh, Of Mice and Men.
Of Mice and Men. Yes,
we got the right writer here. So
you had the right writer. You had everything. Give them...
Moving Through Steinbeck.
Give them 8 points for that, because it took them three guesses, but... It is, in fact, Of Mice and Men by Steinbeck.
Why don't you get Selena's in there? You're pretty sure.
Tony, try this one. In the ancient city of London, on a certain autumn day in the second quarter of the 16th century, a boy was born of a poor family named Canty, who did not want him.
See, 16th, well, there goes Dickens. I would have.
Could you say that whole thing again?
Sure. In the ancient city of London, on a certain autumn day in the second quarter of the 16th century, a boy was born of a poor family named Canty, who did not want him.
Right.
If you need a hint, I will give you the second sentence.
Well, the Canterbury Tales.
Give him 4 points for the Canterbury Tales, and I'll read you the second sentence. On the same day, another English child was born to a rich family.
The Prince and the Pauper.
The Prince and the Pauper is exactly right.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Give them a total of 7 points on that. Arnie, happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way.
Tolstoy. It's Anna Karenina.
It's Anna Karenina.
It is, in fact, Anna Karenina. Very good. Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way is the beginning of Anna Karenina. Very good.
So in other words, you might be dysfunctional, but at least you're unique.
Yeah, that'll cheer you up.
Yeah.
That'll cheer you up.
And I think, as Dostoevsky remarked, well, if that's the case, why go on for another 980?
One might ask. Lenore? Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive. Maybe it's not as hard as I thought it was.
So what is it?
Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive were proud to say that they were perfectly normal. Thank you very much.
It's a children's story. It's
Mr. and Mrs.
And I didn't have a childhood.
I have a child. And
it's
the
one with the little mouse guy. Is it
Stuart Little?
No, it is not.
No.
Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive. We're proud to say that they were perfectly normal. Thank you very much. Any help from that side?
There's tons of help from the audience if you
Any help from
help.
The other side?
Yes, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Well, I don't let my son read Harry Potter yet because he's only 5.
We haven't
covered that yet.
From J.K. Rowling, that is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. That's how that begins.
Shame on
Paula, try this one. Dear God, I am 14 years old. I have always been a good girl. Maybe you can give me a sign letting me know what is happening to me.
Isn't that Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret?
No. Dear God, I am 14 years old. I have always been a good girl. Maybe you can give me a sign letting me know what is happening.
That's too old for Jane Eyre. It sounds like The Lovely Bones, but that's much too new, I'm sure.
Dear God, 14.
This is a tough one, but the key here is the letter format.
Yeah, the letter format, dear God.
Not Miss Lonely Hearts. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I think it might be a blank slate. This is a tough one to recognize.
It's not Little Women, is it?
No, it is not. Any help from the other side?
Anna Frank's.
It's not the Diary of Anne Frank.
No.
Help from the audience?
Who else was the diarist?
It is The Color Purple. Very good. By Alice Walker. That's how The Color Purple starts with the series of letters.
Very good.
And finally, Barry, my mother and father should have stayed in New York where they met and married and where I was born.
Angela's Ashes.
Angela's Ashes is very good. Mr. McCourt's Angela's Ashes. That's our Spotlight Round. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. Just follow the Got a Good One link on our website, and we'll do our best to find your favorite. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's go on to round five, the category we call There Are No Small Roles, with the exception of the roles that were served here. What are you laughing at over this?
Large buns.
You had to ask, right?
Yeah. I'll ask the audience. Do we leave that in?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, boy, this is an easy room to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. More dog.
We'll give you the cast of a movie, one name at a time.
Oh, goody.
You give us the movie. The faster you do it, the more points you get.
This is called the Arnie Round.
Yeah, this is the Arnie Round.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is.
Carolyn,
mm-hmm.
Jeff Goldblum.
Fly, The Fly.
No. Wait a minute. To Jeff Goldblum. That was a guess.
That was a guess.
And this is a movie, right?
Yes. Okay. To Jeff Goldblum add Barbara Hershey.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Nashville.
Barbara Hershey.
No. Jeff Goldblum and Barbara Hershey add Fred Ward.
Wow.
I don't know.
One of my
this.
Favorite movies.
Barbara
Jeff Goldblum, Barbara Hershey, and Fred Ward. I think it's a blank slate. Whoa. To
it
Jeff
is.
Goldblum, Barbara Hershey, and Fred Ward, add Ed Harris.
Yes.
Oh, the audience just got it. The audience just got it.
Is this The Abyss?
No.
And
Ed
it's, Harris.
And to Jeff Goldblum, Barbara Hershey, Fred Ward, and Ed Harris, add Sam Shepard.
I know I should have studied.
Oh, boy.
I should have done
they
the whole
just
work.
Drew a blank on this. Sure. One of my favorite movies of all time.
I can't wait to see it, but I have no idea.
Any help from the other side?
No.
Academy Award winner. Mm-hmm. Any help from the audience?
Not the
right stuff.
The right stuff.
The right,
the right stuff.
Jeff Goldblum had that little.
That's right. I'm so surprised.
We should have known that Arnie hasn't seen.
That is the one movie that Arnie hasn't seen, I guess.
Wow.
I haven't seen it.
So surprised, Arnie. Really.
Is it a good movie? You recommend it?
Yeah. Tony, try this one. Maybe it's a harder category than we thought here. Try this one, Tony.
Wow.
Ed Begley Sr.
King Kong.
Oh, there goes 10 points down the drain.
Ed Begley Sr.
Yeah. To Ed Begley Sr. add Jack Warden.
Yeah.
Jack Warden.
Yeah.
See, this one Arnie has.
Okay. Well, I can see these guys.
Any help from that side?
Yeah.
To Ed Begley Sr. and Jack Warden add Jack Klugman.
Mm-hmm. Jack.
Oh, everybody knows now. This is a tough category.
Jack Klugman.
It's a quiet category.
Yeah, still a blank slate. To Ed Begley Sr., Jack Warden, and Jack Klugman, add Martin Balsam.
Mm-hmm. Martin Balsam. Well, I'm seeing these guys all walking around in Navy uniforms.
No.
Every time I imagine Martin Balsam, he's in a Navy uniform.
I can't believe that, actually, two stumpers here. To Ed Begley Sr., Jack Warden, Jack Klugman, and Martin Balsam, add Henry Fonda.
Five Angry Men.
Well, you've got
to... Oh!
Yeah, we'll give them 2 points for that. It's actually 12 Angry Men. It's 12 Angry Men. Watch this.
Well, I didn't get right stuff.
So. I got to say, these guys were all such great character actors that it's impossible to identify the movie that they're in.
But he got it on the first one. You got it on Ed Begley scene.
Well, I thought that's where you were going to go. Yeah. I was waiting for...
Yeah. Yeah. You wrote that down.
Try this one, Arn. Hoagy Carmichael.
To Have and to Have Not.
No.
No. Okay. Keep going.
To Hoagy Carmichael, add Virginia Mayo.
Virginia Mayo.
This is worthy of you. This one's worthy of you.
is that a Western?
Hold
is
the
that...
Mayo on that Hoagy.
Oh, I think we're going to have to go for six on this. For Hoagy Carmichael and Virginia Mayo, add Harold Russell.
Oh, The Best Years of Our Lives.
Best Years of Our Lives. Mm. The other two were Dana Andrews and Frederick March. Yes. 6 points for that.
Older, these
Harold Russell's a local guy.
Yep. Harold Russell is a local guy. Yeah. Is he still alive? Is Harold Russell
still alive?
Yes,
he is.
I think he's got to be like...
For those of you who don't remember, Harold Russell won a special Academy Award for the best years of our lives. He was the double amputee.
He
had his arms blown off while handling ordnance in the Navy.
Yeah, it's true.
It was a wonderful performance. I mean, the guy had never acted before and just totally tore your heart out.
Francine, try this one. This is tough. Gene Wilder.
Oh.
Super Train.
Oh, I know. I know what you're going for.
Oh, yeah.
A guess?
Yeah.
Any guess?
Yeah, I know.
Blazing Saddles.
No, not Blazing Saddles. Did Gene Wilder add Estelle Parsons?
Yeah.
Did he get it on Gene Wilder?
Bonnie
and Clyde. Because you started with him.
Bonnie and Clyde is exactly right. Very good.
Very good.
Bonnie and Clyde is right. That's 8 points for Tony. Gene Wilder, Estelle Parsons, Gene Hackman, Faye Dunaway, and of course Warren Beatty.
Oh, he was the guy that gets kidnapped for a while and is very nervous.
He's the back of the car. All right, Paula, try this. This is worthy of you. Wendell Corey.
Oh, well.
One of my favorites.
Corey. I can sure see him.
I can see him in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
No?
No.
To Wendell Corey add Thelma Ritter.
Didn't she play maids a lot?
Yeah, she did.
Okay, so we need a movie with a maid.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. All the Thin Man movies, for example.
You've got to get it on the next one, so.
Wendell Corey, Thelma Ritter. It's not...
The Thin Man?
No. Okay. To Wendell Corey and Thelma Ritter, add Raymond Burr.
Oh, yeah. Got it now.
No.
Wait a minute.
Rear Window.
Rear Window is exactly right. That's exactly right. 6 points.
Yeah.
And finally, Barry... Try this one. Richard Jekyll.
A lot of war movies.
J-A-E-K-E-L. Richard Jekyll.
Hell is for Heroes.
Oh, right.
Iwo Jima.
I'd give him
The Sands of Iwo Jima.
Anyway. No, not. But you're getting there. To Richard Jekyll, add Clint Walker.
Clint Walker, isn't that a tough category?
Is
that the one about the 13? What's the group that goes and does the Dirty Dozen?
The Dirty Dozen. Yeah. Very good. 8 points. Excellent,
Tony.
Good
job, Tony.
Not 13.
Well,
the Baker's Dozen.
Give or take.
It's a Baker's Dirty Dozen.
They all get killed, you know.
I'll give you an extra.
Who's counting?
It was a great finish. It was not quite enough because on this week, 79 points did it for Miss Lyon's team. Congratulations, Paula. That's all we have time for this week. Scher and Salkind are the writers. Fernando Ruiz and Robin Moore faithfully record. Our closing thought for this year. As you bring in the new year, put a spring in your step and a song in your heart. And then see how long it is before you're hauled in for questioning. See you next year.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. That's saysyou.net. S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Benjamin, give them the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.